The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Daily Kitzer Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Rafael Schneider.
We're about to begin Siman Kuf Yud Beis 112. The siman is titled Eza Chametz Asa LaShayse BePesach VeEza Mutar LaShayse. Which chametz is prohibited from maintaining one possession over Pesach, and which chametz is permitted to maintain in one's reshus one's possession over Pesach? There's an Isra Taira. There's a prohibition from the Taira not only to eat chametz on Pesach and get pleasure from chametz on Pesach, but also to maintain chametz in your possession over Pesach. Even though in truth the chametz does not belong to you, the Torah already removes it from our possession midday on the 14th of Nisan, which is the day before Pesach. Still, nonetheless, if a person hasn't rid himself proactively of the chametz before that point in time, then if a person has chametz over Pesach, even though it's not actually his personal possession, the Torah considers it like it's his. This is true of chametz, something that's pure chametz, mostly chametz. This is true of a mixture as well. And if a person kept it in his possession over Pesach, not only was he over, not only did he violate an Isra Taira Kol La Yiralacha and La Yimata, not only was he over an Isra Taira, which basically means you're not allowed to keep chametz in your possession over Pesach, but the chametz is prohibited even after Pesach from the Rabbanon to get pleasure from. There are other foods which the Rabbanon said you can't keep in your possession over Pesach because they were worried maybe you'll come to eat them during the days of Pesach. Now, a food item that had chametz cooked in it, and then the chametz was completely removed, and only the flavor of the chametz remains in the dish, that's also prohibited, even though there's actually no real chametz. Like, you can't look in the dish and see chametz, identify chametz, but since there you don't have 60 times the chametz that was cooked in the dish and then removed, the entire dish is prohibited. Let's continue. Aleph. Kol davar sheish bo taraivas chametz. Anything that has in it a taruvus of chametz, a mixture of chametz, afilu ein by chametz ve'ed, even though there's no chametz, pure chametz there, rak ha'tam mechametz, only the flavor of chametz, like we just mentioned, kagayin shehisiru as a chametz, for example, he removed the chametz, and it only imparted chametz flavor, mikol makim aser la'shayis v'pesach. Nonetheless, one is not allowed to maintain that food item over Pesach. There's a machlaikas. If the iser here, if the prohibition here is midrabanan, since there's no actual chametz here, it's just flavor of chametz, even though we may hold that flavor, prohibited flavor in a food item, is like the food item is here, that's a general question in halacha. If you have, you cook pig into a dish, which is prohibited, and remove the pig, the dish, according to many paiskim, is prohibited min ha-tayra. So even if the chametz is cooked into this food item, and it's considered to have the flavor min ha-tayra, that's only relating to not eating it. But maintaining your possession, that's only Nisar Midrabanan. But some say, this is the Shita of the Oyla Shabbos as well, Some say that there's even a prohibition in the Torah, not just to eat that food item that has the flavor of chametz in it, but to maintain it in one's possession over Pesach is also prohibited as well, min ha-Torah, from the Torah itself. That's a question. Either way, whether it's min derabbanan or min ha-Torah, either way, it is prohibited to maintain in your possession over Pesach, as the Kitzer Shofanach just said. Continues the Kitzer. Avol davar shalehaya b'chametz klal, something that didn't have any chametz at all. Elish nisbashel b'kli chametz, it was only cooked in a chametz pot. What does it mean, a chametz pot? Does that mean a pot with that the walls are made of chametz? Obviously not. It means that that's a pot that had chametz cooked in it. It absorbed the chametz flavor. Now a non-chametz item was cooked in it, and now the pot has given off the chametz flavor into the food item that was now being cooked into it. That's called chametz flavor being imparted into the next dish. Afilu haya kli v'nyayma, even if that kli was used on that day, and the flavor is considered real flavor, like we just mentioned, the concept called tam ke'ikr, the flavor is as if the item is here. Ay shenichbash b'kli chametz, or one did kavush. Kavush means to maintain. There are different types of kavush, but the one type of kavush is where you maintain a food item in a pot for 24 hours, and even though it's cold, the flavor leaves the walls of the pot, and it is absorbed into the dish. So even if it was nichbash, even if kavush took place where, though it's cold, the flavor was imparted into the dish, mutter l'ashayisa v'pesach, you're allowed to maintain such a dish over Pesach. Are you allowed to eat it? Obviously not, because it's considered to have chametz flavor. But you're allowed to maintain that kind of chametz, you're allowed to, that kind of chametz dish, even though you're not allowed to eat it. Why? Since the Paiskim speak out that since this chametz traveled, it traveled from the original food into the walls. Then it went from the walls of this dish back into the new dish that was just cooked or left to sit in this pot for 24 hours. So we're not so machmir. The flavor is a weaker flavor. It's a weaker flavor that has been imparted into this new dish. And therefore, though you can't eat the chametz, not the chametz, you can't even eat the dish that has this chametz flavor in it, one is allowed to maintain it over Pesach. Continues the Kitzer. V'davkesh nisbashel boy, nisbashel ay nichbash kaidin Pesach. Only if the bishel, the cooking took place, or the kavisha took place before Pesach, the sitting in the pot took place before Pesach, where the flavor went out after 24 hours. Avol, however, im nisbashel and nichbash b'Pesach, but if the bishel took place, or the kavisha took place on Pesach itself, the flavor was expressed from the pot on Pesach itself, b'chli chametz, using, for some reason, a person had that happen using a chametz tikapat, chayovim levarei. In that case, we were obligated to destroy the dish, the food item that was either cooked or had kavush done to it on Pesach. That food item would not allow to be maintained. Everybody holds that you're not allowed to eat on Pesach a dish that was cooked or that had kavush done in a chametz tikka pot. The Mishnah Berurah adds that even if this kli was not used for chametz within the last 24 hours, and therefore the flavor is generally not considered to be real flavor, it's also for the Rabbana, but the flavor of Minat Torah is not there. Still, we're very strict. And the Rama writes this, even if it's a small amount, even if it was 60 times, but if the kavlish took place, or the bishul, the cooking took place on Pesach, then we would say that this item is also to eat during Pesach. Any kind of dish that was cooked or that was had kavlish done to it and now was made on Pesach, one is also to eat it, even if it's an Eina Ben Yayma, even if it was not a pot that was not used within the last 24 hours. Beis. Tvua, grain, sheyesh boi garin and tzmuchim. Grains that have in it garin and tzmuchim, that means kernels that either growth has started from the kernels, oy muvukoyin, or they've developed cracks, which starts to indicate that perhaps a leavening has begun in these kernels. Afilu hein moravin ma'at baharbe. Even if the majority of the kernels are mixed, are really not problematic kernels, and there's only a minority amount of problematic kernels, tzmuchin ay muvukoyim, ones that have begun to sprout, or ones that have begin to develop cracks. Still, one is not, as we'll soon see, one is not allowed to maintain them over Pesach. We'll talk about it in a second. There's a general machlokes, there's a general disagreement. If you have a prohibited item mixed with a permitted item, majority is permitted, a minority is the prohibited. See, do we say you could eat the entire item? We say there's something called bittul b'rov, where the majority, we call majority, wins. It dominates. And it says that the Torah understands that the entire item, even though all three parts, let's say there's two parts of Isser and one part of Heter, one part that's permitted, and they get mixed together by accident. So some hold that you can eat the entire mixture, because the Torah says that even the item that was prohibited becomes mutter. It's the idea called bittul b'rov. And others say, no, you can eat everything but the amount that fell in that was prohibited. Even though perhaps you're really going to eat the item that was really prohibited, but you can't eat the whole taruvis. You can't eat the whole mixture. Because then it's like you're eating everything. You're eating for sure going to be eating the iser. That, the Rabbanan said, you can't do. We have such a machlekes. The Rosh holds you can eat everything. And the Rashba says not. The Shaitzia in the Mishnah Berurah on the bottom says that if a person is in a pinch, it's a difficult situation, one is allowed to rely on the Rosh and permit the entire mixture, even though you know for sure one part of it is prohibited here. And therefore, since it'd be mutter to eat, it's also mutter to maintain it over Pesach. That's a comment from the Mishnah Berurah. However, the Kitzer writes that generally we say, afilu, even though it's a minority with a majority of non-chametz and a minority of chametz, we would be strict. I'm just saying the Mishnah Berurah says, in a pinch, in a difficult situation, one has room to be lenient. As long as this took place before Pesach, the mixture took place before Pesach, one would be allowed to maintain the entire mixture over Pesach. Continues the Kitzer, v'chein tvua, and so grains shenafal amayim, that water fell on them. Meaning you don't necessarily see that they've begun to leaven, but you know that water fell on them. Oy sherochtzav amayim, you washed in the water. Oser lahash oisa you're not allowed to maintain it, to keep it in your possession over Pesach. V'chein, kol ha-dvarim shenasa mitzvah zu, and so to anything that was created, any dish that was created from these grains, osur l'hash'aysan, one is not allowed to maintain them over Pesach. Now, there is a caveat here. If a person had 60 times the problematic grain, 60 times the grain that was washed, or 60 times the grain that was had water fell on it, or that started to sprout, and a person created out of these grains flour, one is allowed to eat that dish even during Pesach. And for sure, if you already baked and created the dish before Pesach, then you're for sure allowed to use it. According to all opinions. So this is all discussing, as long as you don't have 60 times, then you're not allowed to maintain it over Pesach. But if you already, you have 60 and you made it into a flour, and for sure, if you created the and you used the flour and you created this before Pesach, it's not just mutter to keep, it's actually mutter to eat during Pesach. Continues the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. Umi shemaycher lechaveiroi savua. Somebody who sells grains to his friend, shenislach lecha, that got some sort of moisture on them. Sarich lehidiyala, you have to inform him. Shelo yasha is some Pesach, that he won't keep them in his possession over Pesach. The Aruch HaShulchan asks the question, why does a seller have to tell him? He'll look, he'll see if they already sprouted. He'll see and he'll act with them appropriately. So the Aruch HaShulchan says that if a person has tzvuah, has grains, that he doesn't do anything with them, he just lets them sit, that even if they didn't necessarily sprout, you don't always see the sprouting on them. Sometimes they'll begin to be nischametz, and you can't identify it with your eye. And therefore, the Aruch Shulchan says, that's why it's the obligation of the seller to inform the buyer, because it's not something clear. If it was something that was clear and identifiable to the eye, then everybody would know it on their own. You don't need to tell him. But because it's not something that clearly can be identified by every person with their eye, therefore every seller who knows that his grains became involved with, you know, touched liquid, became involved with some sort of liquid, then a person would be obligated to inform any buyer before Pesach that he shouldn't maintain those chametz, that kind of grain, during Pesach. Continues the Kitzur, la'nachri, and to a non-Jew, asul machri, you're not going to sell it at all. B'makim sheish chashash, in a place where there's a concern, shinkarena nachli Yisrael, that the guy, the non-Jew, will then turn and sell these grains to a Jew, v'yash oisa Pesach, and he will then keep them over Pesach. So even though the Jew is unknowingly buying problematic grains, he looks at it, he doesn't see with his eye that these grains have actually been involved with water, had liquid sit on them, fall on them, been washed in liquid, and therefore he'll innocently buy it from a non-Jew. In that case, a person is not allowed, says the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, to sell it to a non-Jew. A Jew? Yes. But tell him. A non-Jew? Says the Kitzur, no. The Mishnah Brura mentions over here that in a case where it's a big loss and you need to sell the grains, and you know of a non-Jew who won't turn and sell it to a Jew before Pesach, but he'll maintain it in his possession over the duration of Pesach, so then you're allowed to sell it to him. You know such a non-Jew that he holds on to this kind of chametz. Maybe he knows the situation by the Jewish community, and he'll hold on to the tzvuah, he'll hold on to the grains until after Pesach, then you would be allowed to sell him the grains, even though they're problematic. We're not so concerned that he'll then turn and sell it to a Jew. The Shulchan Aruch writes in Taf Samach Zayin, Simen Taf Samach Zayin, Simen 167, that a person can sell small amounts to a non-Jew. You could sell small amounts because you're not going to be so worried that then he'll turn and sell it to a Jew. If you could sell him a small amount, that even though he would sell it, it probably would get used up before Pesach, that's not such a concern. So it is a little bit of an eitzah, it is a little bit of a way out, that if a person does have tefillah, he could go ahead and sell it to a small amount to this non-Jew, and a small amount to this non-Jew, and this non-Jew, and even if they would in turn sell it, it would probably get used up. Each one in their own individual little world would probably sell small amounts to a Jew, and they'd probably get used up before Pesach. So that's not such a problem. Today, the custom is to sell all our chometz to a non-Jew, usually through a rav. Or if himself, the person himself, he's a rav, every person should sell it through a rav. And therefore, if a person had such tavua, person had such grains that fell on it water, you could sell the chametz with the rest of his chametz to a non-Jew before Pesach, and that would be the obvious way out. We're not so worried over there. That's the deal, that we're going to sell it to the non-Jew, and he knows very well that he's going to maintain the chametz over Pesach, and we're not worried that he's going to then in turn sell it to a Jew right before Pesach. So that would be today. It's not such a concern. We have a way of dealing with anything that's serious, a serious amount of chametz. People sell whole companies filled with chametz materials. And the way out is, even though some people refrain from selling chametz be'en, pure chametz, but in a situation where it's a big loss, you're of course allowed to sell chametz be'en, a lot of real chametz, to a non-Jew before Pesach. Gimel. Begadim shiniskabsu, clothing that was washed, v'niskenu b'chelev chita, and they were fixed and made better using wheat starch, mutter l'lovshon b'pesach. You're allowed to wear those kinds of clothing on Pesach. Aval ein latzian al shulchan, but one shouldn't spread on his table and use it as a tablecloth. Im yesh aleim ezam amashus. If there's real chometz, if there's real starch there, wheat starch on the table, and you could see it or feel it, then one should be careful and refrain from using it as a tablecloth. Sheish lachosh sheish barer mehen ezapeir. That one a piece of crumb will break off, a little bit will break off, and you're worried it will go ahead and go into your food. The kol shekein also lasays l'seichem kemach shel pesach, and for sure you're not allowed to put any kind of kemach, any kind of flour, for storage, into such a bag that was cleaned and starched using wheat starch. That of course is a problem. Now, if a person has, Mishra says, a kind of clothing that uses heavy amounts of starch, so then a person should be careful when they're eating not to wear those kinds of clothing. So there were times when people heavily starched the head coverings that the ladies wore. And therefore, a person has to be careful that lest they fall into the food, a person shouldn't wear those kinds of head coverings Pesach time. And he adds that there were people who were very, very meticulous who didn't use this kind of cleaning and starch materials on their clothes within 30 days of Pesach, just to avoid any issues. Dalin, paragraph 4. Mutter ledabek niyaris b'chaloin. A person is allowed to stick papers using glue onto a window, afilu b'say shleishem yayim la'pesach, even within 30 days of Pesach, v'ovad sh'leyehei ha'chometz nira. As long as the chometz is not able to be seen. The kevan sh'adevek ein ha'chometz gomer. Since the glue is not real chometz, it has some chometz in it, but it's not real chometz, v'gamu b'chusin, it's also covered, one can't see the glue. Loi hichmiru bai. The Rabbanan were not strict when it comes to it. The Chazon Ish explains that since the glue is very thin and it's almost like it's a bottle, it's almost like it doesn't exist, like it becomes part and parcel of this chaloyin, this window that one stuck the paper onto. So if you could see the glue, which we'll talk about in a second, so then it's not considered batel, it's not considered null and void. But if you can't see it, then it's almost like it's almost like it doesn't exist. It's almost like it's part of the window, it's part of this chaloyin, this backing that one has stuck the paper onto. And therefore, there's no problem of maintaining chametz over here. However, as we'll talk about in a minute, if it was put on 30 days before Pesach, then it's had time to sit. And it's considered mois, it's considered somewhat disgusting in the eyes of people. And people wouldn't use that kind of chametz at all. It's been sitting there, and all the elements have gotten to it already, and dirt has gone on it, and nobody would use it. There's no obligation to get rid of it. Even if you could see the little bit of glue, it wouldn't be a problem. And that's what the Kitzer continues. Aval, im nir b'chutz, but if you could see the glue is not there, it's not under the paper, it's not carefully put where it belongs, but it's sticking out on the sides, then it's prohibited. Then, like the Chazon Ish explains, it's not batel. It's not null and void. It's there. You have to get rid of it. However, kaidim shleishim yaim, but before 30 days, if it was already put on 30 days ago, before Pesach, b'chol inyan mutter, in all situations it's okay, says the Chazon Ish. The reason is because it's already considered like a non-food item to people. It sat there for so long that that small amount of chametz that's mixed in there, and it's been sitting out in front of the elements for so long that people wouldn't even consider it a food item anymore. The Magen Avraham says that it had a chance to sit and it lost the tzura of chametz. It lost the form of chametz. So that's why it's permitted to leave the glue. Even if you could see it, one is not obligated to get rid of it before Pesach. Paragraph 5. Hey, diyoy, ink, shenisbashla b'sheichar kaidem Pesach. It was cooked with beer before Pesach. Obviously, the beer is chametz. Mutter lichtay bay b'chol hamayt Pesach. You're allowed to write with that kind of ink on chol hamayt Pesach in the intermediate days of Pesach. Kevan shenifsala me'achilas akelav kaidem Pesach. Since it's already became nifsal, it already lost the quality of being able, being wanted to be used and eaten by dogs, something that's already nifsal, something that's lost the madrega, it's lost the level of being a food item to dogs, it's no longer roy, it's no longer fit for dog consumption, before Pesach already. So then you're allowed to maintain it on Pesach itself. V'chein, says the Kitzer, kol kiyaitze b'zeh, anything similar to this. Shenivsol, v'nivsar hachomet, the chomet already lost, it became disqualified, and it lost its status of chomet. L'gamri kaidim ha-Pesach, entirely before Pesach. Mutter ha-Pesach b'hano u'v'shia. You're allowed to keep it over Pesach and get pleasure and maintain it in your possession over Pesach. See, they used to mix in this diyoy, in this ink, things that are bitter. And since the bitter parts of this, the non-edible parts of the ink would ruin whatever chametz parts are in there, they make them inedible. The Magen Avraham asks the question, why are we worried that the cipher, the one who's writing with the ink, will put the pen, the stylus, will put the item into his the writing item into his mouth. He'll forget, and he'll eat some of the ink. And even chametz that's nifsal, that no longer is roy, no longer is fit for achilas kelev, you're not allowed to eat it. You're allowed to maintain it in your possession. You're allowed to use it, but you're not allowed to eat it. So why are we worried that if he's being involved with it, he'll come to put it in his mouth? Because sometimes we know people put the pens in their mouth. So Magen Avraham says that's only a problem if he eats it intentionally. So then that's considered like you're machshavit. It's considered like you're making the chametz not puzzle, not in a roy lachilas kelev, not something that's not a food item, because you're making into a food item by putting it in your mouth. But here, if you're only doing it by habit, without thinking about it, it doesn't give it a higher status than it was before. If you have a person has an oil that was made out of grains, and he put into it some sort of other mixture which ruined it, and no longer roy, it's no longer fit to be eaten by a dog. The Sholmeshiv, one of the great Paiskim, who lived in the 1800s, says that a person is not allowed to use it. Why? Because this idea of making it not fit for a dog is only something that's usually eaten. But here, the oil, its main purpose is to light. So good, it's not fit for a dog. But its purpose was not for eating to begin with. It's only something that initially was used for eating, and now you're ruining it. So that's something which you're allowed to maintain over Pesach. But here, it's not called making it nifsal. You're not ruining l'achilas kelev, because it never was something that a dog usually ate. There are those who argue, and one should, if one has a situation, one should ask a question to a competent rav. If one has schnapps, some sort of liquor, that was made inedible. This was a case where it was made inedible by the local authorities, because again they put in something in it to ruin it, that people shouldn't come to eat it, and now it's not fit for a dog. So the question rose: does that also allow a person to maintain such chametz in his possession? It's not fit for a dog right now. So the Lush Mordechai writes that since dogs they don't normally drink liquor, it's not something they would drink anyway, so then putting in this other kind of additive to ruin it, and now it's not fit for a dog, that's not called Eina Roy LeKelev. It already was an item that wasn't fit for a dog to begin with. So you didn't ruin it for a dog by putting in this additive. It was already something that wasn't added, and therefore that doesn't help. It doesn't help to be called not fit for a dog. It already, before it even started, it wasn't fit for a dog. Continues the Kitzer. Avol goy, however, a non-Jew, shebishel b'pesach diyoy b'sheichar, that he cooked on Pesach diyoy ink v'sheichar with beer. Osur liYisrael v'ano, it's prohibited for a Jew to get pleasure from it. Mishum the chametz shel goy gam kim osur liYisrael b'hano b'pesach, because the chametz of a non-Jew is also prohibited to a Jew to get pleasure from on Pesach. It's not just our chametz we can't get possession, we can't get pleasure from. We're not allowed to eat or get pleasure from any chametz on Pesach, whether it belongs to a Jew or a non-Jew. The Beis Ephraim says about this that it's not true. The Beis Ephraim says that it's only a problem if it was in the possession of a Jew and it still was fit to be eaten. But if it was something that was always in the possession of a non-Jew, and it became also ruined by the additive that you add to the ink to make it not fit for a dog by the non-Jew, and then it came into the possession of a Jew, he'd be allowed to keep it in his possession during Pesach. And therefore, when a person has a question like this, even if it was done on Pesach itself, one has room to be lenient. Though the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch sounds like he's machmir, he's strict, Rav Moshe Feinstein writes that when a person has a big tzairich, a big need, he could be lenient if it was already ruined in the possession of the non-Jew, even though it was done during Pesach. So this last halacha of the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, there are those who are lenient, and one could, when one has a situation like this, one can ask the question, and perhaps there's room to be makel, to be lenient. Vav, last paragraph. Kol kelim, all object, all utensils, she'enai machshir lepesach, that one does not make them kosher for Pesach, one does not purge them, clean them and purge them before Pesach. Sarech l'shavshem heitev, you have to rub them and clean them very well, be'erev Pesach. Koydem shashishis, before the sixth hour, ladicham, and to rinse them, be'inyin shaloye chametz nikras, in order that there should be no chametz that's evident in the kelim, in the utensils. V'yatzniyem, and he should put them away in a hidden area, v'makam tzenua, in a hidden place. She'enai rogilelech l'sham b'pesach, that a person is not accustomed to using that area on Pesach. Put in a closet up high somewhere out of reach, where a person would not normally come to use them on Pesach. V'toiv l'sogram, and it's good to lock them up, to close them off. B'cheder miyuchad, in a special closet, a special room. Latznias ha'mafteach, and to hide the key. Ad l'achar Pesach, until after Pesach. Chometz that's absorbed in kelim, that's absorbed in the inside of kelim, it's absorbed in the inside of these vessels, a person does not, over b'ayiro b'ayimasa, a person does not have a prohibition min ha-Tayra to maintain in his possession. Nonetheless, there's a minig to sell one's kelim or the chometz that's in the kelim, and once you sell them, you really don't have to clean them out well, like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch says. He's only assuming you're not going to sell the kelim, but if you do sell them, then a person does not really have to clean them out well. Nonetheless, there's a kosher minig amongst many, there's a kosher custom, a proper custom amongst many, to clean out his vessels well, even though he'll sell them and the chometz that's in them along with the rest of his chometz. And that's the end of Siman Kuf Yud Beis 112.